Guys, welcome to The Pulse. I feel like I say every week that I'm excited about the guest, but this one's different. I say that from time to time. I was, like so many people watching, the person who came up watching WWE. I was a little delusional. I thought I was going to be a WWE superstar. But we have one who actually is, from being really born into the business to the highest level possible in the WWE. The American Nightmare. So we do like the whole opening promo and stuff.
The whoa? Yeah, you got that music. I've gotten used to it now. The fans all like to say whoa every time it hits, and I have to do it with them. Love it.
Cody Rhodes, welcome to The Pulse.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. You could still be a WWE superstar.
No, that ship sailed, man.
No, you're a Pulse superstar.
I'll take that.
Paul, but you could always, it's never sailed, you know? It's never sailed. If you ever want to get in there, man, I encourage everybody at all times.
You know when I knew it sailed? This goes way back. I was a kid, and there was a meet and greet for the Big Boss Man.
Oh, I love this. All right, yeah.
So, and your boys hype you up into thinking you're... So I walked up to the Big Boss Man at a meet and greet, and I was like, all right, big man. And he stood up, and I was like, yeah, this ain't for me.
Yeah, but well, I mean, in that case, though, you met a guy who was genuinely big. I will say the modern wrestling roster does vary. Sizes, there's giants like Omos, and then there's still Rey Mysterio, you know, cruiserweight type WWE superstars that all kind of fit together now. So it's still, hey. Back then, different era. And a lot of times when you're a superstar, WWE superstar, a wrestler of any kind, you meet some of these guys from this era, it's always the same reaction. My brother's the same way because my brother's 6'5". Okay. It's always the same reaction. Like, all of you, huh? Every one of you were giants. And you didn't even know watching the show back then. Like, they were all just massive, massive.
Yeah.
A lot of beef.
I learned quick. And that wasn't for me. I started off saying that you were kind of born into this. Mm-hmm. For some of the people, like obviously the fans today know you and your family and your legacy, but walk us through that. Like, you literally were born into the business.
Yeah, it's funny that being here to talk about like WrestleMania, specifically coming to Philadelphia, people now think it's part of just the legend or like the lore, or a fake origin story. But the reality is, my first memory ever, first memory of all time, the youngest I was my dad brought me to WrestleMania in Toronto. And it was his only WrestleMania he did with WWE. And he brought me there and he put me on the mat. I remember seeing the turnbuckle, it was yellow and blue, the classic at the time WWF logo. And that was the first actual memory I had at a WrestleMania. And it was normal for me my whole life, and until I really ran into other people's parents, okay, who had different jobs that weren't, you know, on screen type jobs, and they would react to my dad in a certain way because he was a little older when he had me, so they might have remembered him during his heyday, and the way they would react to him always gave me some indication that this is maybe a little abnormal, this gig we have, this thing that we do. And to me, it was just the perfect childhood because he was home a lot. At the time, he was executive producer. His main wrestling days had passed him. But then he would be the boss, so he'd bring us to the shows, and I'd be around all these just dynamic, like larger-than-life characters. My first couple of babysitters at shows were Sherry Martel, Scary Sherry, absolute legend, WWE Hall of Famer, and Sting. That was just normal. They just keep an eye on me. And like, even like Stunning Steve Austin, long before he became Stone Cold, would just keep an eye on me in the locker room, which I should have never been in the locker room. But it's like my dad would just leave me. And I'd get my backstage pass and I'd go back and forth. I'd sit out and watch it. And it was just, to me, it was normal. But yeah, this is what I always was around. There was no way I was ever going to do anything else.
So it really was. Yeah. Like, you knew it even then. At some point, you realize it's extraordinary. But by then, I've read somewhere, you were training when you were 12.
I mean, start doing this. I feel bad for my mom because she never really got a shot. She didn't. She would have liked for me to like do something else. But I was brought around it. So if you're brought around it and you see all these fans, and I mean, I saw some wild stuff. I remember one time my dad gave somebody their payoff in a like a paper lunch sack, and it was just stacks, as the kids call them now, of cash. And I thought, like, yeah, this I don't want to do anything else. This is way cooler than whatever your guidance counselor was suggesting at the time. So my poor mom, she never really got a shot. But I got into amateur wrestling at 8 because that was something my dad didn't do. He was big TV, you know, suspension of disbelief type wrestler. And then amateur wrestling, I found out the hard way, is very different. Okay. But it became my sport and my foundation to, because today you have to have those skills. You have to be an athlete. WWE is recruiting on the highest level of athletes now. And it was very helpful. Started refereeing at 15. I was ready to go.
When did that? It's interesting you mentioned that, because there was a period mm-hmm. of time where you obviously had to be an athlete then, but it was a lot of performance. You know, and now, you know, you see people who are doing things that even watching on TV, like, yo, that guy just fell off a cage that's mm-hmm. 25 feet in the air. You know, growing up through that, when did that kind of transition into, I just can't be the best guy or performance or promo. I've got to be an elite level athlete.
That's a great, the shift in it all has made it actually really difficult for us in the best of ways. Very challenging is a better way to put it. Very challenging for us because, like you said, you can't just be good at one thing anymore. My dad was a really great interview, a really great promo, to the degree that most people remember these promos and these interviews. They don't really remember the matches so much. Mm-hmm. Today, you have to check almost every box, and that it's about that, I'd say, about the time Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, who I just wrestled at SummerSlam, about the time those guys got beat. Second time. Got him. Thank
Let's
you.
Keep it real.
Yes. Man, the pulse is real, y'all.
And he's not here. So
no, you would know it. Ahead, he's big boss man level. Like, oh, come on, man. You're so big.
But beat.
It's about the time they got in the business because Kurt had come from the Olympics, Brock two to NCAA championships. I think it shifted right around there because everybody just started to up their game to a degree, and the game is just like any other sports or any other sports entertainment where it's getting faster, it's getting lighter, it's all shapes and sizes again. But yeah, that period around there is.
Well,
who's that? Is that a fire
it's
alarm?
Early. Nah.
Oh, I thought it was a fire alarm.
That's why we edit, not live. That'll be in the blooper reel.
That's okay. Just checking if we need to get out of the building. Right. No, it's right in that early 2000s where now it's become so heavily athletes. And the Performance Center in Orlando, where we recruit for NXT, which will ultimately, they'll go to Raw, they'll go to SmackDown, hopefully be on all these pay-per-views. NIL athletes, I went and looked at the latest crop. They don't look, it's a lot of big boss mans, if that makes sense. There's a lot of beef. Okay. There's a lot of really athletic individuals in there. And now if they can learn a little bit of what we do, but also if it gets in their blood. It's got to get in their blood. You can be the best athlete in the world, but if you ain't into this,
no,
it's not an easy gig. So see if it gets in their blood and they like it, and they're having good success with it.
Was there a point, I wonder, because again, you said that this was all you ever knew. This is what you were born into. Your family's doing it. Was there ever a point where it wasn't legacy and, oh, this is really cool that my dad and my family does mm-hmm. this, and it was just extra pressure? You know, it is being LeBron James' son on the basketball court is tough.
Yeah.
Doing all those kind of things. And you've managed in a lot of ways to surpass that. But was there a point where it was like, I got to do me. Like, stop making me somebody else's son.
It's really difficult in terms of, I look at kind of the Mount Rushmores of sports entertainment and wrestling, and there's these dads out there, you know, Rock's daughter, for example, she's at NXT. Ric Flair's daughter, Charlotte, she's a WWE superstar. Absolutely, just a wonderful legacy and career she's had on her own. They're good examples of, you can look at it as it's pressure, or you can almost look at it as if it's just the biggest challenge ever presented. It's a bigger challenge than your day-to-day would be. It's your task is to be better than they were, which is a wild statement and a wild thing to say, but it's your task if you choose to take it up. And for me, I always looked at it that way. I never was really burdened by the pressure. I never was really bothered by if you meet older fans or if they know him and they don't know you, it never really bothered me, especially now in his passing. It's kind of welcomed, like when you meet an older fan who's that's all they want to talk about, like, oh, cool. Yeah. But I will say, when I had my daughter, when Liberty was born, she's only two, and that's Brandy and I's only child, that's where I really did stop thinking about doing it for him, and so much about, like, oh, that's far more pressure, right, is reporting back to her. And in my case, like, that's become far more pressure than ever reporting back or having to call him on the phone and tell him, hey, I did this awesome thing, or hey, this, I screwed up. With her, she's not even full sentences yet, and that's really my whole concern, is I got to make sure she knows I did this right.
Talking about excuse me, that desire or that struggle, mm-hmm, to surpass. You come in, you're in the business, you're doing well. So that's obviously a level of success. Then you're headlining WrestleMania. You're and likely perhaps to do it again.
That'd be amazing.
You know, you're beating up Brock Lesnar. Like, you're, I think I read someplace, and there are people here who can correct me if I'm wrong, if the highest selling merchandise, or among the top selling.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Right? That's a good little stat there.
WWE.com you can get.
Yeah.
So the highest selling merchandise. Like, do you ever allow yourself the chance to kind of sit back and go, like, whoa, like, I'm headlining this. Like, those goals, and I'm sure there are more, but those goals, you got to. Like, you did all of that.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of, I guess, a distant goal in the past.
I've had moments. I do try to stay really present, and I have to kind of credit my wife. We've had these moments where it's hit me that we, for example, you mentioned headlining WrestleMania. That's the hardest thing to do in the whole sports entertainment pro wrestling game, is even getting that match. I mean, it's the match. There's two nights of WrestleMania going into now WrestleMania 40, celebrating 40 years of WWE. That's the one that I really felt like that's a great feather in my cap. That and I did try to celebrate that one, and I did try to be present with it. But also the fear, and this is like the high we get from being in front of all these fans and the excitement, and like you mentioned, selling all this merchandise. The fear is, I don't want it to end, right? You never want the party to end. There's kind of this old wrestler lore where if you have this great segment, say you had a great crowd and they were just going nuts or whatever it was, great moment that you don't want to leave. You don't even want to get out of your gear. You hang out in your gear longer, you're in the locker room longer, you're just kind of in it. And I feel like that's been me every show. I just wanted to stay in it. It's one of the reasons now WWE security is really good about, at the end of the night, I'll stay out there as long as it takes. If I can get the whole, what we call corral around the ringside area, if I can get everybody in the aisle, I'll stay out there as long as it takes. Sometimes they do kick you out of these buildings,
right,
but I'll go like kicking and screaming just because I don't want it to end. But if it did, I want to make sure it was a great run throughout.
So you still, you clearly still love this.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, like, this is fun.
I think people know that the show is taped, but if you didn't, the show is taped. So it's interesting, it airs 6:30, 10:30 in prime time and in the evening. Right now, for those who are watching, it's like 7:00 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like, yeah, let's do the interviews. Let's come in. Let's keep it moving.
Might have been a little false confidence on my part.
No?
So
there wasn't that much love for coming in the Pulse?
No, I'm very excited to talk about WrestleMania, and it's coming to Philadelphia. It's a city that I have this unique link to from a wrestling perspective, but I'll admit I feel like everything is happening so fast lately that I'm just always ready. Okay. I'm always ready, if that makes any sense. Always. And then in this case, like this, we're now off the beaten path here, but in this case, I've done so many media mornings that they don't always go great. Okay. They don't know, and you can tell when you walk into a place in the morning, this is going to be good. This is a good crew. This is a good person. This is a good, you can tell right out of the gate. And then you can also tell when they may not know anything about what's going on. So then you have to give them the sales pitch, you know, and it's just a whole, I'm just ready for all things at all times. So I'm almost disarmed by when it's like, oh, it's a really charming guy. Oh, he just freaking wanted to be a wrestler himself. That's the best feeling ever. It's a good start, which means the rest of the day,
it's gonna be all good.
I don't know. It could be down. It could be down.
Starting the journey. WrestleMania, obviously coming to Philadelphia to the Link in April. WrestleMania 40. Tickets on sale or on sale Friday. So tickets available now. And I was looking into WrestleMania, and I kind of want to get, you were talking about that feeling, but kind of walk us through that. Because WrestleMania does like Super Bowl type things.
Sure.
$200+ million economic impact to Philadelphia. You know,
yeah.
2 days now, $1.2 billion or something like that over the last several years. Like this, these are historic events that WrestleMania is involved in. And you're walking out to, at the Link, you know, 100,000 people.
Yeah.
Like, can the average person who realized they didn't want to be a wrestler even understand the feeling of walking out to that energy?
I don't think the average person, and I don't think the biggest superstar, I don't really think anybody can be prepared for walking out in front of 80,000 plus people, and this happens not just one night. Two nights that we do this in a row, two nights of WrestleMania. I don't think anyone can be prepared for that. The only person I'd say who's prepared for that is the gentleman that I wrestled at WrestleMania 39 in SoFi in the main event of WrestleMania last year was Roman Reigns. And the reason I say that is because Roman's done it seven times. I think eight maybe. That was my first.
Okay.
And I actually remember I'm walking in the ring, there's 80,000 people, all the pyros going off. It's a completely different set. It was just this sea of humanity. I remember I started yelling to the fans, hey, we made it. I almost get emotional thinking about that. So I'm yelling at them, we made it, we made it. And then I meant it and felt it, and that's what I was feeling in that moment. But when I watched it back, I'm wondering, like, what are you yelling on the way? Like, instead of, like, walking down there and smiling and, like, keeping a stoic face and just, you know, taking in all the, like, the beauty shots because it's just an amazing production that Kevin Dunn puts on. But, yeah, no, I just was so – I wasn't ready for it, to answer your question. And that was my response, was just yelling that we made it to all the fans. And that – still, I wouldn't have changed anything about it. It was special. And this year, you mentioned the economic impact, and now cities bidding on – WrestleMania, it's really, we have the easy job, I feel like, as the ones getting in the ring, maybe easier. But then there's guys like, you know, Nick Khan and Triple H and Vince McMahon and everybody behind the scenes who putting in all the groundwork to make this special for Philadelphia, the city itself, and make it feel like the biggest WrestleMania of all time.
Do you think that was your first,
mm-hmm.
you know, God willing? This will be your second to be potentially headlining WrestleMania. Do you think the second one will be better? Like, now you kind of get the chance perhaps to enjoy it.
Well, you've been very nice. And the reality was at WrestleMania 39, in the biggest main event of WrestleMania history, I didn't win. I did not win the match. I lost, and I'm not complaining. I'm not going to get into the specifics of the loss. But all I learned from it really was, here it is, the hardest match to get. It's like getting elected president in our industry, to be in the last match of the year, WrestleMania main event. All I learned was, I need to get back. I need to get back, and I need to win this time. And the road to getting back, it's why right now the product is so hot, and to follow the road to get back is arduous. It's treacherous. It's difficult. It's steep. It's filled with a lot of different potholes along the way. It's just a mess. And I still, though, I want to get back, but this time I want to win. So to answer your question, I would be honored beyond belief, not just to be in the main event of WrestleMania again, but to be in the main event of WrestleMania 40, because it's 40 years of WWE, 40 years of sports entertainment. And Philly gets the 40th, which is just great and wonderful. So I couldn't think anything better.
You talk about Philly. I read someplace that you like. Philly is one of your favorite places to come.
So Philadelphia is known for there are certain wrestling markets that, you know, the reaction might be a little different.
We're different.
So Philadelphia is famous for many things, but it's famous for it. Hardcore wrestling is one of them. Paul Heyman and ECW became a thing, and he ushered in that alternative brand and the counterculture of it all. it's also famous for, they don't really like if you're just a clean cut good guy. It's just something about some Philly crowds, just, you know what, John Cena, you're good, you're cool, but I don't know about, I don't know how we feel about you in Philly. It's like a contrarian approach, and then it spreads amongst the fans where it's like, oh, we're booing this guy? Yes, 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 we're different. The cool thing about it is you can't count on it being like every other city. It's going to be different. And I came here and we did this match at a pay-per-view called Money in the Bank at what I don't think it's the arena anymore, but was formerly Wells Fargo Arena. Finally, a building keeping their name.
Yeah.
So it's my favorite place to wrestle. And the reason why is because we did this Money in the Bank where it was all guys who had never won the world title before. And it was on a show that had a Money in the Bank match with all guys who had been world champions. So internally, behind the scenes, we had been dubbed the Losers Money in the Bank. And we were starting the show, and then we were of the thought, like, cool, we'll blow it away, and then we'll see what they do later on in the night. And at the time, I was just a cheesy, good guy who was kind of climbing the ranks and had been, toyed around and up and down, had a unique career. I didn't learn quickly, a slow learner. But the city just came alive for me. They wanted me to win this match. The story became about, I'd been in so many Money in the Banks and hadn't won. This was going to be the one that I got. And in the end, my partner turned on me. And I'm telling you about another loss. But it was lightning in a bottle, and I never forgot it. And I remember thinking, like, that's my – I'm making that a hometown for me. My real hometown's Atlanta. That's my hometown. And then I made Philly, like, a second hometown. Because after that, it was always the same. They just had a respect. I think that's what it is. Philly fans have a respect. If they've seen you come and they've seen it, they've seen the battle.
Put in the work.
Exactly. There's a respect. And that's not every city. So that's why I always loved it. Anytime I heard we were going to that arena or being in the sports complex over there, never could have imagined that heading to the Link and, you know, over 80,000 people, close to 100,000 people, two nights in a row. Perfect city for it.
That's real. Talk about Philly liking people who put in the work, mm-hmm. put in the struggle. Again, doing research before we talk, so I wasn't just talking about my own experiences with the Big Boss Man. And you have had your nose broken in a match. Somebody hits you with a ring bell and split your head open.
Yeah.
my editor and director, who's sitting off camera right now, showed me a picture of your entire side.
Yeah.
Black and blue, where you actually wrestled with a completely torn pectoral muscle. So my first question is why?
Yeah.
My second is you guys are built different. That's a little crazy.
I don't know why I did it. So the week before I tore it, and there's a 5-day period between me and Seth Rollins were competing at a pay-per-view, and we were the main event in Chicago at Hell in a Cell, and we were the main story going into it. Also, they had made me this giant. I was the billboard. I was on the chair. Just me. That's really rare. Usually got other, different WWE superstars on there. And I just couldn't believe it. Here I am. I made it to the main event after all of this, and I've torn my pec. What do we do? The normal thing is, you do some fun angle, some fun segment that somebody gets credit for hurting you, even though it was me who hurt myself, whatever it may be. And then you're out and you're gone and you're out of sight. I didn't want that. I wanted to give them something to remember me by. And I also felt like I'm okay. But it just looked so bad. And it was spreading like it was like a curse in the blood. Like it was like Dumbledore's arm from the Harry Potter series. It was getting worse and worse. Yes, exactly right. It was getting worse and worse and worse. And by the time we got there, very few people had seen it when I took the jacket off. And I took the jacket off. It's one of the most uncomfortable feelings I've ever felt in an arena, to the point where I thought maybe they think, oh, this is cool. He's fighting through the pain. Most people, I think, were just floored that we were doing it, and then just kind of like, all right. And then we went like 25 minutes. I remember somebody saying like, y'all don't have to wrestle all night, And then we put in like a very long stretch of a match and did a lot of crazy stuff. But yeah, I tell my students at my little school, the Nightmare Factory, I tell them, you'll always work hurt, but don't work injured. Never work injured. When you're injured, that's different. I said that the week before I went and did it, and there's no way for me to justify it to them anymore. I'm just a complete hypocrite. But I wanted them to remember something by. But yeah, it's not.
You wanted the moment.
Yeah,
you worked for it.
The old saying in our industry was we would say it ain't ballet. But then I found out ballet is extremely, like, brutal, like, injuries wise and stuff. So now that saying is not really useful anymore. But it takes a different type of individual, and it's not so much we're built different as much as you have to really, really love it. And you have to love that connection you have with the fans. And I think the reason I, more than anything, wanted to do it is at the time I'd never connected with the fans like I was connecting. So I didn't, like, I wasn't going to lose that. No way. I just couldn't fathom it. And we went out there and had quite a match.
25 minutes.
Yeah, and then.
With a torn pectoral muscle.
Yeah.
And I'm going back to that, and I'm sure we're going to show the picture.
Yeah.
Because when I say you're built different, you're talking about I was okay. I didn't want to give up that moment. You went out there. It was completely torn. You wrestled for 25 minutes and then had to have surgery and were out for like 9 months.
Yeah, I think it's 7 months is what I was out for total.
So you weren't like this was a legit.
Oh,
injury.
This is a complete. So my pec was completely torn off the bone. And then I just had a documentary that came out on Peacock, which they didn't use this footage, but I'm glad they didn't. I don't think fans would have liked it. But they filmed my whole surgery, and they kept saying, "I don't think it can get any worse. It can't get any worse. He's okay to wrestle. Like it can't get any worse." And I had multiple doctors, and they did all the proper health checks with it, and I had strength in my hand and stuff. But then when the doctor cut me open, so much blood had been built up. This is gross. Sorry for mourning. It shot up for like 20 seconds straight. Just shot up towards the ceiling, and they all just backed up, and then they started going to work on it. It was wild, but yeah, I had built up a lot of pressure and a lot of blood in there, as the picture will show. But yeah, it was a very real injury.
And one of those groups that kind of rates matches said it was a 5-star rating.
Oh, they got us the 5.
You guys had 5-star rating with a completely torn pec. You can be as humble as you want. Yeah. That's built different.
I feel like maybe it was that because of the torn pec. In a weird way, it added to the match. The match was wonderful, I think. But I was anytime you can get any type of appreciation like that and that reaction, not just in – it was Chicago that night, but I was in Green Bay the next night because I still went to work the next day to say, you know.
Dude, you're a nice dude. There's something wrong with you.
Say, guys, goodbye. I got to go get surgery. But when I went there the next day, they treated it like I'd – done something massive, like I'd won the presidential election or something. They just treated it like I'd really done something special, and it made it feel very worth it.
A couple more minutes. I appreciate you taking this much time. You mentioned your wrestling school, and so at the Pulse, whatever journey we take, we kind of get back to how people are giving back to the community or the things that they're putting back. Tell us about the wrestling school and why that was something that was important to do.
Well, so the Nightmare Factory, which is in McDonough, Georgia, and we used to have it in Norcross, and we moved it south of the airport. It's the most fun that I have with all of sports entertainment and wrestling outside of the actually being out there in those moments with the fans. Because when you're a beginner, that's the best. You don't have any bad habits. You don't even know what the bad habits are. Everything is new. There's nothing like instilled in you other than you love this. There's something that caught your attention. You want to do it. And I really enjoy teaching that like crop of youth. I really enjoy teaching them. I'm not great when it comes to fundamental chain wrestling, go from A to B to C to D, as much as I can tell you, hey, in front of a live crowd, this moment might work for you. Take an extra second with it. Just these little things that I had the best education. Dusty Rhodes was my father. And then growing up in the business, I started at 20. I got to wrestle with Triple H, got to wrestle with The Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, all these guys who aren't here anymore. I mean, they're alive. Everyone was alive in that, you know, other than my father. But like these legends passed it on to me. That's how it used to be done. And now to be able to just take the stuff they said and make it my thing and tell these kids it's the best. I love the Nightmare Factory. We do a showcase every 12 weeks. It's a beginner's camp. And the showcase I always think it's going to be so bad because they're brand new. They're children. They're brand new. And the running rib gag is like, ah, it was actually pretty good. It was we must have taught them something along the way. It's actually pretty good. But yeah, I love the Nightmare Factory. We just had a scout from WWE come down and give them the hard talk on all the things it takes, and he was really impressed. And I just that makes me feel good because that's the whole point of getting this knowledge. I got that knowledge from those guys I mentioned, and the whole point is passing it on and building the next generation.
WrestleMania 40 coming to Philly, your favorite wrestling city. I don't know that we have to tell people why they should come. Like it's probably sold out now if tickets are just on sale. But tell them why the 40th anniversary of WrestleMania is so important.
I think for those who are on the fence as far as should I get tickets, what night should I get tickets for, I will say, because we're in that pre-sale period now, every show's got like 4 pre-sales now, we're in the pre-sale period, Friday is the general on sale, I would get those tickets. I would get them just because they're moving at an alarming rate, at a Philly rate for WrestleMania. If you are a absolute fan of WWE, then you already know you're going to go to WrestleMania, you're going to travel internationally, you're going to make it work, whatever. If you're somebody who was a fan and you hear about it coming, I would encourage you to show up and be there, because WrestleMania is the best way to put your foot back in the water. It really is. It's the best thing that we do all year. It's the best thing that all of sports entertainment and wrestling has, and it aims to be the best wrestling show, best sports entertainment show ever. Every year we do that. So it's 2 nights. Another thing I'll say, and this is not part of this big sales pitch, but it's just from a performance standpoint, because it's 2 nights, these aren't marathon shows. You're not sitting in your seat for 7 hours. They're done in a really efficient, nice, beautiful way where like you can be there Saturday and it's great, and then it just makes you want to be there more for Sunday. I will tell you too, bring a friend who doesn't like it, because they'll end up becoming a huge fan. There's no better way to introduce somebody to WrestleMania. It's the good stuff. It really is. It's the good stuff. It's the magic of sports entertainment and wrestling the suspension of disbelief. What's real? What isn't? All of it. It's just right there in the best possible package. And this one in particular is extremely special because this is 40 years. 40 years going back all the way to MSG for the very first WrestleMania. That was the biggest gamble in the business at the time. And now it's just a guaranteed ticket, but it's 40 years. So it will celebrate every generation.
Last question on every episode of The Pulse. Excuse me. The theme is called Use Your Voice for Good. It's the whole foundation of this show. I've seen different charitable events. WWE in general, but you specifically do a lot of different things with charity, reaching out to the community, doing all of that. When you hear Use Your Voice for Good, what does that mean for you?
Oh, that's a great, wow. That's the hardest question you say. Well, I always say you can judge a different, someone who I know in the like locker room, a peer, you can judge them by how they handle an appearance, like a charity appearance. How they respond to that. And I have always been of the thought that if you get just a modicum of fame from sports entertainment, or if you become a mega household name like a John Cena perhaps, it is the best thing you can ever do to go out there and use your voice. And in a lot of cases, I just put together, I think WWE, a group in Detroit, we put together 62,000 meals. 62,000 meals for different food banks in the city of Detroit using your hands as well. And it's the best possible thing. And for me, using your voice is a reminder of how lucky we really all are. How I'm so lucky to have this gig, so incredibly lucky. If I could do that every day, and tomorrow actually in Philly, I get the opportunity to go out and hit a couple of the different, what I'd say community activations. That's the best possible thing we can do. Using your voice is, I feel, mandatory for someone who's been given as much great stuff as I have been given.
Guys, thanks so much for listening to today's The Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast episode with WWE superstar Cody Rhodes. I say this often, but it's cool when you get a chance to sit down and talk to people who maybe you've admired from afar or you're fans of the industry, and you find out that they are as cool as you hoped. And Cody Rhodes seemingly fell into that category, very giving with his time, his stories, his information, and we wish him continued success. And we hope that you enjoyed listening to some of those stories. I want to remind you that there are several episodes, both podcasts and on YouTube, that you may not have gotten a chance to see. Do a little search. You'll find that there are some pretty cool guests who have made their way to The Pulse, and you may want to check out those episodes. You can also always hit me up on social media at BillAFox29. I'm always eager to hear from you. And I leave you, as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.